Hello and welcome to the episode 14 of What a Fab Day. I am your host, Simon Mas. Today's episode will feature a return to a familiar venue, a trip to Paris, a junkie moment, and some old standards. Let's see. On the 14th of January 1961, the Beatles, with Pete Best on drums, performed their third of 31 nights at the Aintree Institute in Liverpool for another BK Promotions night organized by Brian Kelly. In 1962, the lads, still featuring Pete Best on drums, played the Casbah Coffee Club in Liverpool. The venue was owned and run by Pete's mother, Mona Best. The Casbah Coffee Club was one of the venues that saw the Beatles most active in the earliest part of their career. As the Beatles, or as the Quarrymen, the band graced the stage of the club for 44 times between 1959 and 1962. Moving on to 1963, the Beatles played in front of a full house at the Civic Hall in Ellesmere Port. The 700 attendees came for the Wolverham Welfare Association dance. Ellesmere Port is a decent-sized settlement not 20 miles from Liverpool, but it was the only booking in town for the entire career of the Fab Four. Exciting times in 1964. On this day, in preparation for their first French concert, to be held on the 15th of January, George Harrison, John Lennon and Paul McCartney took an afternoon flight from London to Paris, France. Travelling with them, manager Brian Epstein and road manager Mal Evans, plus various journalists from the British press. Ringo Starr hadn't been able to join them at the time. BeatlesBible.com, quoting a passage of Apple press officer Derek Taylor's book, 50 Years Adrift, maintains that Starr was stuck in Liverpool due to the bad weather, but it remains an open question how in the world Ringo had ended up in Liverpool, since the previous evening he had taken part to the band's TV performance from the London Palladium, and that there are no records of him rushing to Liverpool for the night. Such is the life of historians. Even for a story so well documented as that of the Beatles, there are contrasting pieces of information or pieces of the puzzle missing. Anyhow, on their landing in Paris, the three Fabs were greeted by 60 fans and the French press. More fans were waiting for them at their hotel, the George V. For their stay, John and Paul shared a suit in which a piano had been installed. They were supposed to come up with at least 8 songs in the next 3 weeks. One for Billy J. Kramer and the Dakotas, one for Tommy Quickley, and 6 for the Beatles' first movie, whose filming would have started soon. In the evening, George, John, Paul and Epstein met Bruno Cocatrix, director of the Olympia Theatre, where the Beatles were going to play for the 3-week residency, plus representatives from the Beatles' French label, Odeon. After that, Lennon and McCartney stayed in to work, while Harrison went clubbing with Derek Taylor. Back then, Taylor worked for the Daily Express, and he was tasked with the ghostwriting of George's column for the paper, describing the band's trip to Paris. The tour of the clubs then was in part a business matter. According to Taylor, "On our first night in Paris, we went, at George's suggestion, to a nightclub specifically to supply the populist London dailies with that hint of ooh-la-la their reader were presumed to expect from Frenchness." Taylor also noted that, even back then, George Harrison enjoyed the chance to get around without being constantly harassed by fans, showing how at least one of the Beatles felt about Beatlemania, even in its early days. Moving on to this date in 1965, the day had another two houses of the Another Beatles Christmas Show production at the Odeon Cinema in Hammersmith, London. The Beatles featured in both of them, with their 2 comedy skits and their 11-song performance that closed each show. On the 14th of January 1969, John Lennon, Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr faced the cameras at the Twickenham Film Studios for the ninth day of the rehearsals for the Get Back TV special, still without any sign of George Harrison. The day started with Paul working alone at the piano, a usual circumstance lately. Then, after John and Ringo arrived, the trio moved in the usual fashion, performing improvised jams, oldies, trying out new compositions, or hammering out those that were almost completed. The back seat of my car, later issued in Ram, the 1971 McCartney's album, was first tried out today. Jazz piano song, included in the Let It Be film, but otherwise unissued, was another highlight of the day. It was a boogie-woogie piano sketch performed and technically written by Paul and Ringo, but there wasn't much to it. John offered two songs, Mad Men and Watching Rainbows, both unreleased to this day. Then, the usual discussions about the future. Director Lindsay Hogg asked the three if they prefer scrapping the live show idea and move the rehearsals and their filming to the more welcoming EMI studios in Abbey Road. John Lennon replied that any decision should have been taken along with George Harrison, who, at the time, was in Liverpool. The plan was to wait the end of the week. Something would have happened by then, and if nothing did happen, that was still an indication for the continuation of the project. Also today, around lunchtime, John Lennon and Yoko Ono were interviewed by Canada's CBC television in what became known as the Two Junkies interview. John was evidently on heroin, and he grew paler and sicker, to the point that he had to interrupt the whole affair in the middle of things, being too sick to continue. Part of the material was used in the 1988 Imagine John Lennon documentary, with John discussing the being counted out and in lyrics in Revolution and Revolution 1. Finally, on the 14th of January 1970, between 2:30 and 6 p.m., Ringo Starr was at the Olympic Sound Studios in London. It was the seventh recording session for his debut solo album, Sentimental Journey. During the session, he overdubbed vocals on two standards, Love is a Many Splendid Thing, arranged by Quincy Jones, and Sentimental Journey, arranged by Richard Perry. The instrumental tracks had been recorded in the United States in late 1969. The session was wrapped up with a rough stereo mix of the songs. The album Sentimental Journey was meant to be a collection of old jazz standards, as a present to Ringo's mother, put together at the time when the Beatles knew that they were reaching the end of their road together. In the 1995 reissue booklet of the CD, Ringo commented, "I wondered, what shall I do with my life now that it's over? I was brought up with all those songs, you know. My family used to sing those songs. My mother and my dad, my aunties and uncles, they were my first musical influences on me. So I went to see George Martin and said, let's do an album of standards. And to make it interesting, we'll have all the arrangements done by different people." This leaves me with the task of reminding you once again to please check www.simonmas.com/support if you want to show your appreciation for What a Fab Day and find ways to support my efforts. Remember that even simply bringing this and my other musical projects to the attention of your friends does mean a lot to me. It won't cost you a penny, but it will allow me to get heard, which is no mean accomplishment. In the description, you will find the usual link to a complete list of songs recorded during the Get Back sessions, the Amazon affiliate link to the material that inspired me to write the podcast, and also a link to the Two Junkie interview, the best I could find. For the moment, I wish you a good day and a fab continuation. Simon Mas, music you love.